Thank you very much, and thank you for joining us today on this media teleconference to discuss actions from today's Division I Board of Directors meeting. Our speakers today include the following: Mark Emmert, President of the NCAA, Judy Genschaft, Chair of the Division I Board of Directors and President, University of South Florida, Ed Ray, Chair of the NCAA Executive Committee and President of Oregon State University, Walter Harrison, Chair of the Division I Committee on Academic Performance and President of the University of Hartford, Harvey Perlman, Chair of the Bowl Licensing Task Force and Chancellor of the University of Nebraska at Lincoln, and Sydney McPhee, Vice Chair, Student Athlete Wellbeing Group and President, Middle Tennessee State University. President Emmert will start with opening comments, and then we'll hear from our other speakers. We will then take questions from reporters. President Emmert.
Thank you all for joining us, pardon me, this afternoon. We appreciate your attention to the work that the Board of Directors just concluded. It is fair to say that the meeting and the work of the Board in the past 24 hours has been a very aggressive and meaningful set of changes that put real meat behind the agenda that we produced in August at the President's retreat that we held. It is, for me as President of the NCAA, heartening to see so many people working together and willing to take on the critical issues of intercollegiate athletics and to do so in a much more accelerated time frame than is typically the case for these decisions. Back in August, when we met, we came out of our retreat with a resolve to address two very broad topics, the first being student athletes and the fact that our students need to be students who happen to be athletes and not the other way around, and that we needed to do everything we could to help them be successful in the classroom as well as on the courts and on the fields, and the actions that were taken today are an enormous step in that direction. We secondly agreed that we needed to address the way we conduct our college sports, and especially to pay great attention to the integrity of intercollegiate athletics and the challenges that we saw there. And those are the next steps that we will be taking in our January and April meetings, and we can talk about that as well if you want to. And thirdly, we all committed to do these things and take these actions through processes that would be much more direct and much speedier in their approach to resolving the major problems. And I think what you're going to see today is that, in fact, the board did just that. In regards to the students as student athletes who are, student athletes as students first, we took some steps today, and the board passed a wide array of measures that I think is going to have a positive impact on our student athletes. First of all, they passed the implementation language around the new 930 APR thresholds. They established new initial eligibility requirements for both entering freshmen and community college transfers with higher grade point averages and curricular changes. They introduced and passed the notion of an academic redshirt model to allow continued access to higher education while still increasing the academic requirements. They passed the language to allow conferences to provide up to $2,000 more in the size of the scholarships that they receive to cover more of the costs or expenses that student athletes face. They passed language that will allow scholarships to be multiple year instead of single year. They passed a whole new men's basketball recruitment model, and they passed a new bowl licensing model, as well as a handful of other ancillary changes. It was, in short, one of the most aggressive and fullest agendas that the Division I board has ever faced. They moved with dispatch on all of these questions, and the impact is going to be very, very important and very, very positive for all of our schools and all of our student athletes. Bob?
Thank you, Mark. With that, we'll turn it over to President Genschaft.
Thank you. As Mark had said, this was an unprecedented meeting, and it was very, very positive. All of the presidents are very eager to work closely on events and changes that can improve the student athlete experience. From our August meeting, there were task forces and committees that were set up, and there are approximately five of them. One is the Committee on Academic Performance, a second, Student Athlete Well-Being, third, a Rules Working Group, fourth, a Collegiate Model Enforcement Working Group, and fifth, the Resource Allocation Working Group. We heard from each of these task forces. Some had come with action item recommendations, and some had come with suggestions that will be action items in January. This is our first meeting since August, and I can assure you that we were very thoughtful and but moved decisively about making a difference for our student athletes and for NCAA.
Thank you, President Genshaw. President Ray?
Good afternoon. I chair the work group focusing on infractions and enforcement. At the August retreat, we agreed we wanted to change the reward risk calculus that people face when they're making decisions about how to behave, and to tilt things very much in the direction of making people who behave badly wish they hadn't. Our group is focusing on expanding the number of categories of violations from the current major, secondary, to four levels of infractions, and producing penalty guidelines for findings in each of those areas that are appropriate, and as one might expect, for the most serious violations, pretty serious penalties that deal not only with some of the traditional individuals or groups that have been identified with infractions, but holding institutions and institutional leadership accountable as well. We've also been discussing processes for adjudicating each level of violation with the intention of speeding up the process and making matters as transparent as possible. Let me stop there. We expect to bring recommendations to the board at the January meeting, allow for vetting after that, and then enactment of any bylaws changes that are needed to put them in place.
Thank you, President Ray. President Harrison?
Thank you. Let me be as direct as I know how to be. I believe that yesterday and today the board passed the three most significant initiatives in NCAA history that are that will ensure student academic success. I believe that we'll look back on today as an historical occasion. In short, these here are the three initiatives that the NCAA Division I board passed. First, we raised initial eligibility standards for students coming from high school to college. These standards are raised in the following ways. We are raising the floor for intercollegiate competition from a 2.0 high school GPA in core courses to a 2.3, and we are increasing the sliding scale we have, which includes both the high school GPA and standardized tests. If you fall in the category between the 2.0 or the 2.3 or on the sliding scale, you will be eligible to receive academics or an athletic scholarship and to practice with the team, but you will not be eligible to travel or participate in intercollegiate athletic competition. We are calling this an academic redshirt year, so that you will then have your first year in college to concentrate on your studies and prepare yourself for success in college. We have also increased to 10. We've increased the high school requirements. You will now have to have completed 10 core courses. We require 16 to enter college, but you will have had to pass 10 of those core courses by your seventh semester in high school, and 7 of those courses will have to be in English, math, and science. This is meant to prepare high school students better for the rigors of college life. Secondly, we've increased the requirements for transfers from two-year colleges. Those students will now be required to have a 2.5 GPA in their two-year college, and only 2 of the credits they transfer can be in physical education. And finally, we have, as Mark Emmert said earlier, made a 930 on the APR tests the standard for eligibility in postseason play. A 930 on the APR, as you know, is a predictor of a 50% graduation rate. We realize that this is a major jump, and so we are allowing a 4-year ramp-up period for teams to get ready to meet this standard. For the current year, there will be no changes, but beginning next year with the 2012-2013 academic year, you will be required to hit a 900 APR, and in the third year of this period, a 930. We have also created an alternative means to do that because we know that you can't change what's already passed, so you will have to have had two, as an alternative to hitting those numbers, you will need to have 2 straight years at 930. Put together, we think this is a tough but fair approach to having teams improve their academic performance, but allowing them time to do so.
Thank you very much. President Harrison, we'll now turn it over to Chancellor Pullman.
I chaired a task force on to relook at the NCAA's involvement in the licensing of postseason football bowl games. As you know, the NCAA does not run the bowls. They determine the eligibility of teams and can certify which bowls its members participate in. We have very much followed the spirit of the reform that came out of the president's retreat, looked at the core values of the NCAA, and tried to limit the regulation of bowls to those values. So we have a set of rules with respect to the integrity of the governance of the bowl sponsoring agencies. We have adopted most best practice proposals associated with nonprofit corporations. We have a number of provisions with respect to student athlete welfare. The board adopted them the spirit of a principle that bowls should start only after first semester exams and end before the second semester. We've left the details of that to be worked out. We have proposed, and the board accepted, that the academic criteria used for participation in NCAA championships also apply to participation in postseason football. And we have brought forward and continued a series of regulations with respect to commercial promotions and the title sponsorships of bowl games. We have eliminated regulations dealing with the financial integrity or sustainability of the bowls. That is left to the conferences who contract with them. And we have moved out of a licensing environment into a certification environment where each bowl sponsoring agency will have a board of directors with some community representation, and they will certify to the NCAA that they've met the criteria that the board has adopted.
Thank you, Chancellor Pullman. I'll turn it over to President McPhee.
Thank you, Bob. I served as vice chair of this working group. President Graham Spanier from Penn State served as chair. The group included broad representation from the membership, including athletic directors, coaches, student athletes, faculty athletic reps, and others. There are 6 recommendations that the committee made to the board. All the 6 recommendations were approved today. There are 2 that I would like to just comment on that I think will
make a significant difference in our focus on really focusing on the student athlete, welfare. The first is we have approved permissive language and legislation that will allow by conferences increase in the assistance to student athletes, including up to an additional $2,000 for miscellaneous expenses. That includes incidental educational costs above tuition fees, room and board, and books. Lots of discussion with regards to the many years that the institutions and the NCAA has really not looked at those additional costs that student athletes bore as a result of their involvement with our institution. We also saw this as very much consistent with what institutions have done throughout the years in adjusting other types of scholarship, academic scholarship, that would look at supporting the student. The second major recommendation that was approved by our board was allowing institutions to award multi-year grants and aid. And again, this is symbolic to our focus on the student athlete, the student welfare of the student athlete at our institution. I'd like to point out that particularly with the moving from the grant and aid to the full cost of attendance, that this legislation that was approved by the board really allows for all student athletes within member institutions to take advantage of. This is not just for certain sports, but for all student athletes. Both of those recommendations got full support of our committee, and I was very pleased that our board voted and approved those recommendations. The other recommendations that make up the six really are part of implementing those two main recommendations dealing with the full cost of attendance and the multi-year grant.
Thank you, President McPhee. Our next speaker is Dave Burst, our NCAA Vice President of Division I Governance, and he'll be speaking on some of our men's basketball issues. Dave?
Thank you. Today, our chair of the NCAA Division I Leadership Council, Mike Alden, the athletic director at the University of Missouri, reported to the board on a year-long study of men's basketball recruiting. And thankfully, it was adopted as well today by the board for implementation, full implementation, no later than August 1 of 2012. But among its provisions, it provides for the opportunity to text and have unlimited phone calls with sophomores, with young prospective student athletes in men's basketball after their sophomore year, beginning June 15. It also will reintroduce two weekends in April that coaches believed were important to their evaluations of young prospects. It changes the calendar in July to some degree. It is intended to put our coaches in a position to have a more natural communications and relationship sequencing that will help both the prospect and the coaches make better decisions about which institution to attend. We have a pretty comprehensive set of provisions that were adopted by the board, and we have that set forth in a chart that I would suggest that those of you who are interested in that, we can circulate it to you after this call. But the action was taken to adopt the Leadership Council's work today.
Thank you, Dave. At this time, we'll open up the call for questions. Operator?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. You may remove yourself from queue at any time by pressing the pound key. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 at this time. And our first question comes to the line of Norman Cox from WRTV. Please go ahead.
Yes. Do you have any estimate of the number of teams who played in last year's bowl games or men's basketball tournament who would have been ineligible under these guidelines?
Yes, there were seven. This is Mark Emmert. There were seven teams who would not have been in the men's basketball tournament and eight teams that would not have been in a bowl game under these criteria. Were they in effect today or last year?
Can you name those teams?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, you can press star 1 at this time. And next we'll go to the line of Dom Morris from the Hartford Courant. Please go ahead.
Yeah, this is for Walt Harrison. Will there be an appeal process attached to tournament eligibility, or will these rules be hard and fast?
Hello, Dom. We have search filters, which mean automatic. Is that your line, Dom?
Yes.
There you go.
Yes. Yeah. Is
okay.
Right?
Great. Thank you. So we have both filters and appeals, waivers, we call them. So filters are automatically applied. These have to do primarily with low-resource institutions and some improvement standards. And then you can appeal, but we are going to be very, very strict about appeals. So we really don't expect waivers, is our word, waivers or appeals to be a major factor.
And just if I to clarify that I understand, to be eligible in 2013, an average of 930 for the previous 2 years would be acceptable, even if you're short of 900 over 4 years. Is that correct?
You'd have to have a 900 over 4 years, or 930 in the previous 2 years. Correct.
Okay, but not necessarily two consecutive years of 930.
Two consecutive years of 930 in the most recent years counted.
All right. Okay.
So
all
you would have to show that you had improved.
Okay. Good. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And next we'll go to the line of David Wharton from the Los Angeles Times. Please go ahead.
Yes, this is a question for Mark Emmert. In regards to the increase in grant and aid, some might be concerned about another increase in athletic spending, or even say that this is a step toward closer to pay for play. Can you talk about where you see the dividing line here?
Yeah, sure. The dividing line on pay for play is very sharp and clear. This is most certainly not pay for play. This is about trying to cover more of the legitimate expenses of the cost of attending college for our student athletes. The model for scholarship support, as President McPhee described, has been unchanged for decades, probably four decades or more. At the same time, there has been a sharp change in the time and commitments of student athletes to their sports, regardless of what the sport is. And so this is a recognition that while the scholarship model hasn't changed, the needs for paying for expenses in addition to the old scholarship model are very real. In terms of the ability of institutions to pay for this, that's one of the reasons that this model is being made permissive and not mandatory. So individual conferences, not individual institutions, will have the option of whether or not they want to adopt this approach. One of the advantages of doing it at the conference level is, should conferences decide that they would like to utilize conference revenue in some fashion to cover these costs, they can do so to mitigate some of the expenses on individual institutions.
A quick follow-up. Are you concerned at all about competitive balance from conference to conference, the larger conferences versus the smaller ones?
If you saw the Knight Commission's data from Monday, what you saw is in Division I, the range of expenditures per student among Division I athletic departments and conferences runs from $40,000 to $160,000, basically. There's right now a four-fold spread difference in the expenditures per student athletes. $2,000 is not going to have any impact on competitive advantage.
Thank you.
Could I just, this is Walt Harris, can I just correct something I said to Dom? I know this matters a great deal to you. You asked me specifically about the alternative route for improvement. You need a 930 average of the two most recent years, not 930 in each year, but the average must be 930 of those 2 years. Thank you.
I would also like to add to Mark's comment to the previous question regarding the increase in scholarship. I know, and I think my presidential colleagues will agree with this, we all, as presidents, to be competitive on the academic side, do a regular review of our scholarship to see how competitive we are with regards to attracting the best and the brightest. And in many cases, we make adjustments up to be competitive. And I, as we discuss the 2000 and the cost of attendance issue, we saw a very similar kind of comparison in terms of the student athlete. And so this is not unusual in higher education to take a look. And it's unusual that the NCAA and college athletics haven't looked at it in decades, but we do it quite regularly on our campus to be competitive.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, you can press star 1 at this time. And next we'll go to the line of Jeff Goodman from CVS Sports. Please go ahead. Jeff Goodman, your line is open from CVS Sports. Do you have your mute button on?
You guys hear me?
Hello? We can hear you now.
Okay, sorry about that. Mark, just trying to find out, I know there was a proposal to trim the scholarships from 13 to 12. Did you guys address that, or will that be addressed in January or April?
Yeah, Jeff, how are you? The working group on resource allocation that has a number of working concepts right now won't report out their work until January, so there'll be a lot of discussion and debate between now and then.
Perfect. Thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you. And next we'll go to line of Andy Katz from ESPN. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. On the recruiting model that Mike Alden puts forth, I'm wondering if I know this was a proposal at some point about the ability for the coaches to also work with their players in the summer, regardless of whether or not they're in summer school. And then also, I know there was a proposal about allowing the at least one parent, if not two, or one guardian, if not two, to accompany a prospective student athlete on an official visit. Wanted to see if that was dealt with in any form, either one of those things.
Yes, the recommendation regarding the summer workout was adopted in concept. In other words, the concept of the coach working with both the prospective and enrolled student athlete was approved, but the leadership council was asked to come back in January with alternative models, possibly the model that you're aware of, but in addition, one that may be tied to either summer school attendance or, for example, another option might be to measure the progress toward a degree of the participants who are involved and draw a line in regard to academic performance and the ability to work out with the coach. So that discussion will continue. The matter related to official paid visits and being able to pay the costs of two parents or guardians to travel to an official paid visit is a part of the larger model and was adopted.
So it is two people that are designated as a parent or a guardian?
well, not designated, that the actual parent.
Legal, excuse me.
Yes.
Legal. Yes. And then going back to your first answer, if I can just follow up on the clarification, if you can hear me, on so right at this juncture, nothing's been officially passed as whether or not coaches can work with their players in the summer.
I think that's right, but the board was quick to say they don't want to let the year go by, so they want leadership council to come back in January with the actual alternatives that can be adopted so that it can be in place this summer.
Because wasn't that part of the process that if the coaches were going to go to a system of, I think it was 4 3-day periods in July or something of that nature to get to 12 days, that they would get back days during the week of working with their current players?
From the coach's perspective, that those two things are consistent. You're right. They were looking at the opportunity to be on campus and to travel Wednesday to Sunday on those three weekends, and that looks like that will tie together, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, you can press star 1 at this time. And next we'll go to the line of Allie Grassgreen. Can you announce your affiliation, please?
Yeah, hi, I'm with Inside Higher Ed.
Thank you.
Well, I had a question for you. You mentioned the sliding scale for the GPAs and standardized test scores.
Yeah.
So I was wondering how the standardized test scores might be changed, whether you might be bringing back the bottom or a minimum score, or whether the scale itself is just being shifted.
No, it's just the scale itself being shifted. So we're actually increasing it by half a standard deviation, if you want to know exactly what we're doing. So it's just, we're just making it a little, we're just trying to increase the way the sliding scale is computed to be a little higher.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, you can press star 1 at this time. And next we'll go to the line of Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com. Please go ahead.
Hi. Could someone go into a little bit more detail on the 4-year scholarships? I was a little confused about the line about a 1-year minimum. And just talk about what has changed in that.
Yeah, Dennis, this is Mark Emmert.
Hi.
The 1-year minimum is to simply say that you can't offer a scholarship for less than 1 year, an exception being if that's the only amount of eligibility someone had.
Oh.
So the 1-year minimum just means you can't say, well, we're going to do a 1-semester scholarship.
Okay.
That was the only real difference there.
And then there was something in there about a hearing as well. I guess those still exist. Those exist in the current climate, but.
Yes, that's right. So that you have some fair process should a scholarship be revoked, and that's pretty standard operating procedure at every university with all scholarships.
Thank you.
Yeah, I guess the key is I was just reminded that under this new model, under any model, it can't be revoked because of athletic performance, only for other performance issues or behavior issues.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. And as a reminder, if you do have a question, you can press star 1 at this time. And at this time, we have no further questions. Please continue.
Okay. Thank you very much.